All right, welcome everybody. Tonight is January 11th, 2020. This is the eighth shiur of the ninth year, and I guess the times of Shabbosai Tzvi. So up until this time, we've really been speaking about Shabbosai Tzvi himself. What happened to him, what happened to him as a Jew, what happened to him as a Muslim, and what happened to his followers, those followers that converted, the Domna, and we followed those through. And then we also spent a little time following those followers that remain Jews, that remain secret Sabbateans. And really, the story that we're continuing now has to do with these secret Sabbateans. Everything happened in the course of 2 years. The entire debacle, debacle of Shabbosai Tzvi was really a two-year episode. Shabbosai Tzvi for many years was, bipolar, and for many years when he was manic, he did think he was Mashiach. But nothing really got off the ground, and they all thought he was just crazy, and he just dealt with it until he finally met a person by the name of Nathan of Gaza. And together, Nathan of Gaza was a tremendous, tremendous publicist, and he was the one that brought his attention to the world. And that's what happened, and the whole thing from beginning to end was 2 years, I believe, from 1650 to 1652, around that time. Now, what's really significant is because the events that we are going to be dealing with are really going to be about 100 years later. So, with the course of all these years in Klal Yisrael, there are many people who are acting like from Jews, who are from Jews, and the only thing is they still believe that Shabbosai Tzvi is Mashiach, and they're very secretive about themselves, and they have their inner core, and they have their people, and that's it. They were very, very secretive about it. The Rabbanim were very vocal and very aggressive to try to remove any Sabbatean influence that's around. And now we're going to come to the story. The story tonight is going to take place, and it's going to be with, I guess I'm going to call it four great rabbis, really three great rabbis, and maybe you would say like a fourth. And this incident, there is going to be no winners. What's going to happen is this incident is everybody, Klal Yisrael loses. No matter how it ends up, it is going to be a loser. The four people we're going to deal with are Reb Yonasan Eibeshitz, a great rabbi in his own right. And Reb Yonasan Eibeshitz, just the background is Reb Yonasan Eibeshitz is going to be accused of being a secret Sabbatean, a Shabbosai Tzvinik follower, a Shabbosai Tzvi follower. There are two people that are going to accuse him of being a Shabbosai Tzvi follower. And those two people are going, and two great people in their own right. One of them is Reb Yaakov Emden, and the other is Reb Yeshua Falk. Reb Yeshua Falk is, we know him, those that learned in yeshiva, we know him as the Pnei Yeshua, which even to today, his works, his Sfarim are studied part and parcel of the Gemara. And when you're learning Be'in and you want to know Pshat and the Pnei Yeshua himself, I think he writes, his goal is to defend Rashi against Tosfos. So very often Tosfos argues on Rashi, and if you want to know how to learn the Gemara and how Rashi would answer, one of the sources you would look at is the Pnei Yeshua. Rav Yaakov Emden, great in his own right. We have from Rav Yaakov Emden The sitter, the Emden sitter, he came up with a beautiful perish on the sitter, among other things as well. He made a Gemara, a printing of the Gemara, which is very one of the most accurate printings. And Rabbi Yonatan Eibeshitz, he's also a great rabbi. One of the things that is very commonly used today, we have one of his Sefer on Drushas, his Divrei Torah, the Yarus Davash. So you have three great rabbis, the two of them, the Pnei Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua Falk, and Rabbi Yaakov Emden, is going to accuse Rabbi Yonatan Eibeshitz as being a Shabtai Tzvi. Now there's going to be another person who's going to play a major, major role in this. And afterwards, I'd like to maybe even tonight, if we could, focus on him as well. And that's Rabbi Yecheskel Landau, who we know from his Sfarim, his Shaila V'Tshuva Sfarim, as the No Debi Yehuda. Very good. The No Debi Yehuda. So he is going to be like the peacemaker. He's going to try to come in and be like, you know, have a middle ground, so to speak. To try to save Klal Yisrael, or to try to save the situation. But let's start off. Rabbi Yonatan Eibeshitz, by age of 18, was appointed the rabbi in Boleslav, something, Mladá, Boleslav. He was there for 3 years and settled in Prague in 1700. And there he became, you know, the head of a yeshiva. He became a darshan. And he was held in tremendous, tremendous esteem from the people in Prague. As a matter of fact, later when they're going to need to find a new rabbi, one of the conditions of finding a new rabbi was somebody who sided with Rabbi Yonatan Eibeshitz in this controversy. And the fact that they took the No Debi Yehuda speaks volumes of the No Debi Yehuda. We're going to see this further. He received permission. He also to do some printing. Rabbi Yonatan Eibeshitz made some printing of the Talmud. And he had to take out things that had to do with Christianity, so as not to run into problems with the Christians. And that's one of the things that he did. Now, in 1724, he was accused. He was suspected of being a Shabtai Tzvinik. But he got up on that Yom Kippur in 1724 and he denounced the movement in any way, shape, or form. He didn't say no excuses, no double talk. He got up and he said unequivocally, it's wrong, I am not part of it. And that could have been or should have been the end of it. Okay, and that should have been it, and that was it. That's it in 1724. 1736, because of this, I guess some sort of a stain, you know, some things just never leave a person. He was in 1736. He was appointed Dayan of Prague, but not the chief rabbi. In 1741, 4 years later, he became the rabbi in Metz. Metz, I think, is in France, or Germany, or I think Western Germany. And 1750, he was elected rabbi of the three communities, Ahu in Hebrew, and that's Altona, Hamburg, and Wandsbek. Okay, 1750. All right, and that's really where our story is going to start to take place, while he was the rabbi of these three communities. Whoops, let's go back one. Okay, again, he was acknowledged genius in halacha, in drush, and Kabbalah. He was a wonderful personality. And he was a very Baal Mashpia. He had a tremendous positive hashpa on many people. Okay, so now here comes the issue. I don't know why I'm having a hard time with this. Okay. Okay, this is where our story takes place. Rabbi Yonatan Eibeshitz, he became suspected of being a Shabtai Tzvinik because of a certain amulet that was given.
Excuse me 1 minute. Can you explain at this point, 100 years later, what the Sabbatean beliefs were?
So again, the secret, they believed that Shabtai Tzvi was Mashiach.
Well, besides
right.
that? I mean, it's
I again, it also came with a certain warped sense of Kabbalah of what Hashem is and what Mashiach is. If you're believing in, if you're believing that he's Mashiach, but wait a minute, didn't he convert to Islam and didn't he like make the mistake of like dying? So like, how is he still Mashiach? So if you can only, if you're gonna still believe he's Mashiach, then you have to believe some sort of, some very close to what the Christians believe, that there is some sort of his neshama and it becomes someone, some part of Hashem, and it's there and he's around and somehow.
So Rabbi Eber should change halacha, like.
Yeah. So we know that halacha is not going to change with Mashiach. The Torah is forever, and Mashiach will not come and change any halacha.
If his beliefs were like Shabtai Tzvi, did he also believe in changing halacha?
So in his public life, he was stellar. He was like a Rosh Hashiva and a Dayan and a
Yeah.
So Rabbi Yonos and Ibish says, no, you never saw anything about him in public.
Okay.
He said all the right things, and everything was right. Everything was fine. Now, why did why was there some suspicion in 20 years earlier? I don't know, but there was some sort of a suspicion, which he totally denied it. And now we're going to see what is going to happen again that's going to bring out this.
Okay.
Again, part of the belief that they have to believe is, first of all, why did Shabtai Tzvi come? So there has to be two Torahs. There was a Torah that we got from creation. And then Shabtai Tzvi, why do you have to have a first coming if there's a second coming? Almost like parallel to Christianity. He had to teach us a new type of a Torah, a new type of a Kabbalah that we didn't have before, and that's going to help. You know, with this new thing, it will help bring Mashiach with his new understanding. So, okay, but that's. Did they do? Well, okay. Did the secret Sabbateans do anything secretly against halacha? I don't know, but there was definitely a warped belief in what Hashem is, something which we may consider to be avodah zara. Okay, based on that. Okay, now there was this amulet. Now, what's an amulet? Amulet is like something like you write on a cloth, a piece of paper, and on this piece of paper, you write sort of sometimes the names of Hashem, and you write certain Kabbalistic words or psukim, and that's supposed to help the person who's sick. We do have amulets around. There's an amulet I remember. There's an amulet. It's already taken for a woman who's expecting, and somebody has it in Eretz Yisrael, and he gives it to different people, different women that are expecting. It goes from one to another. There are such a thing. I don't think it's very common, especially not among Ashkenazim. I don't know. Maybe among Sephardim, they may be more into amulets. But that's basically what it is, and I guess a few hundred years ago, it was more popular to write amulets and for people to wear them for segulas and refuas, etc.
Is that what Hamsa is?
Is that what?
A Hamsa.
Hamsa.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I'm not, yeah. Could be the hand and all these different things. Sure. It does definitely has to do with Kabbalah, Kabbalistic ideas and thoughts. Okay, you're right, and they wear the hand, yeah, it could definitely is worn for some sort of a segula. I'm not familiar with how it helps or what it is. Okay, so now what basically happened is now you have to realize, so what are people seeing? What's going on in the world? So you have two great rabbis against one great rabbi, and they're both great rabbis, and the two great rabbis are calling another great rabbi a Sabbatean. I mean, it's just unthinkable. How is this? How could it happen? And like, you know, now people are going to take sides. Like, how could this great rabbi call Rabbi Yonos and Ibishitz? I know Rabbi Yonos and Ibishitz. I mean, I know he's, you know, what a wonderful, you know, Rosh Hashiva is, and he's being called a Sabbatean. And you know, so again, and so. What was the on the tzad of the Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that he was a secret Sabbatean, And yet he had all these rabbis that were sticking up for him. So on the one hand, you say, well, they believed him, that Reb Yonis and Eibeshitz was not a secret Sabbatean, or maybe they were afraid of the fallout. Could you imagine the fallout? What if Reb Yonis and Eibeshitz was really a Sabbatean? So like the greatest, one of the greatest rabbis of the day was a Sabbatean. What would that do for, A, the secret Sabbateans, you know, or what would that do for Klal Yisrael that says, oh my gosh, who can you trust if your greatest rabbi is a Sabbatean? So that was also like part of the issue, like how does everybody deal with it? So Rabbi Yaakov Emden said, yeah, the rabbis just said that because if they didn't say that they believed him, that he's not a Sabbatean, then, and they said the truth, or they all, you know, they came out agreeing or whatever, then there would be a terrible fallout, which is where Nino de Behuda is going to come up with something in the middle. Yeah?
Did they bring evidence for that?
Yes, and I'm about to show you the evidence. And I guess you can make a decision about what it is. And here's the evidence. This is what the amulet, this was written on the amulet. Now the amulet is written as something called Atbesh. Atbesh is some sort of a code where the Aleph is the first letter of the Aleph Beis and the Tuf is the last letter. And they could be interchangeable. And the second letter, Beis, it could be interchangeable with the Shin, which is the second letter, second to last letter of the Aleph Beis. The Gimel with the Resh, the Dalet with the Kuf, etc., all the way down the middle. Right? So the Atbesh, you know, okay? And it's a certain sort of a code. Okay? So the amulet that was given to this certain person from Reb Yonis and Eibeshitz said the following. Okay? Now, if you want to read this with me, Ana Yitzava Akam Yisreich Habukacht B'Sefara Uzo Na B'Chuza Avdo B'Baba'a Habik Shalach Refua. Okay, so that doesn't make sense. However, if you change it to Atbesht, it sounds like this. Ana Hashem Elokei Yisrael, okay? Hashochein B'Teferis Uzo. Now Hashem that lives in Teferis Uzo. Now I don't know if you remember last time we spoke about Teferis Uzo. For Shabsai Tzvi, Teferis was very important because he had sort of like two gods. There was this general god and then he had a personal god. His personal god, he always said Elokei Yaakov. And when you do the Sviros, right, the Sviros, we know a little bit of the Sviros if you read the last paragraph by the Sfira, by Sfiras Omer, right? The first one is Chesed Gevura. Number three is Tferis, right? And then Netzach. And so everybody matches up. Chesed is Avram, Gevura is Yitzchak, Tferis is Yaakov. And he always said, okay, Yaakov. So here it says, Hashem, who dwells in Tferis, Uzo, Nabischus Avdo, Shapsai Tzvi, Kuf, Shalach Rufua, and then the next line said, Laba Zos Lamat Yiskadav Shimcha V'Shem Mavikach Bababa Yahavak, which when you plug in the Atbesht, it says, Lisha Zos Laman Yiskadi Shimcha V'Shem Mashicho Shapsai Tzvi Kuf V'Olam Kel Na Tain Rufa. This was the Kameya that was found, that was opened up by Rabbi Yaakov Emden. And this is a Kameya Chashid Shaharoi that was shown to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, Tevas Kuf Yud Aleph, Shehitvis Rabbi Yaakov Emden, B'Sefer Edis B'Yaakov Daf. Okay, so this is it. This is what the Nusach said. It said the top. It didn't say this. Right? It said what's unreadable. But if you plugged in Atbesht, it would read this. Now this is pretty clear.
This is from Reb Eibeshitz.
Right. So now it doesn't. I guess did Reb Eibeshitz say I didn't send that Kameya? I don't know. Then what would have been the issue? Or maybe it was somewhat established that she got this Kameya from Reb Yonis and Eibeshitz. You know, and he did give Kameyas. Reb Yonis and Eibeshitz did give Kameyas. Maybe was it all switched and it never came from him? So then, I don't know, it doesn't seem that the controversy that maybe he did say, I didn't give it. But maybe there was enough of a indication that it came from Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz, you know. It doesn't seem that the machlokus was that you gave it to him, no, I didn't. I mean, it doesn't seem that it was just as simple as that, where he denied giving this kameya. Maybe that's all it was. Or maybe there was enough of an indication that we know for sure it came from Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz. But this is the evidence, and this is what was presented to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and this is serious. I mean, if it did come from Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz, and it does work with Atbesh, you see what you'll see in it shortly what the Noda Yehuda says. But if this comes and you follow Atbesh, this is, you know, yeah.
It doesn't say any place Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz didn't write this. It was that he saw the amulet and approved it. It almost seems that he wrote it. Today, even currently, we have the issue every so often someone comes out with a new sefer, and then they go to different rabbeim to get, you know,
okay,
the haskama. And
could be, maybe.
And then once in a while, you have okay. The problem where
so you maybe
the
that
gives the haskama,
maybe he just
read it,
maybe he had an
there.
Okay. So you're right. Maybe he had the amulet on his desk. He didn't read it too carefully. He had a few of them. Whatever. He just got it from a sofer. Somebody put it there. Hey, you want to buy an amulet? And he bought a whole bunch of few. He took one and put it in, and then sent it out. Maybe. I mean, that's maybe what part of the defense is. Like, here we are. We can come up with many defenses for Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz. And maybe that's all it is.
To relate it to something.
Right. Some different possibilities of how this, maybe this, I believe it was a lady that showed it to him. But maybe this person showed it to her. She was afraid to say she got it from where she really got it from. And she blamed it on Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz. Maybe. But this is the amulet that was given by Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz. And this is where this controversy is started. Now, just to show you, there's like a tefillah. What did the Sabbateans, what did they daven? Just b'shem Hashem Elokei, Amiti Elokei Yisrael. Again, Hashochim b'teferis Yisrael. Okay, and this is, again, the idea had Hashochim b'teferis Yisrael, this is the idea of the three parts to Hashem. Telas Kishrei Dalad Behemenusa. There are three parts, Dinun Chad, which are all one. Okay, but this is, and then Yalda Adonenu Melech Hamelech Shapsai Tzvi Malkeinu Mashiach Olenu Tfila. This is a Tfila that's found in one of the by a Shapsai Tzvinik. So just over here, this idea also. Hashochim b'tferis, okay, Yisrael, Hashochim b'tferis, and again, Melech, okay. So in other words, it could be somewhat very similar to a tefillah that a Shapsai Tzvi Nick would say. Okay, so now you have this is coming all over Europe, and it's just really not good. So the Noda B'Yehuda, Rabbi Yecheskel Landau, who was involved in this, and he became involved. He was a leading rav of the time, and he felt this is basically his open letter. So he's going to try to come up with some middle ground. He says, on the one hand, what are you expecting to do? They're one of the greatest rabbis to admit that he's a Shapsai Tzvinik? Is that what you want him to do? And you're making all these claims. So, but basically, the idea of the letter, we'll read the letter, but the idea of the letter is the Noda B'Yehuda, this is Noda B'Yehuda's idea, is that this Kameya and every Kameya of the like, you put a Cherim on the Kameya, that you're not allowed to wear it, you have to give it to your nearest local rabbi, the rabbi is not allowed to open it, and it's to every one of these Kameyas are to be buried. And then you make Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz swear through the force of a cherem that he will never write another kameya. And this way, what you have done is you have, I guess, sort of saved the situation. In other words, while this came out, all these secret Shapsai Tzvinik, they're all looking at Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz as their, you know, leader. You know, oh, look at that, he's one of us. So in order to remove them from this, you know, so Rav Yonos and Eibeshitz cannot make any more, and everything that's out there, we're not even going to look at what he wrote, you know, the other ones. Just take all the Kameyas and just, that's it, bury them. We don't know what any of the, everything said. And that was it. That should solve the situation. The whole, the only indication we had at this point of Rav Yonos and Eibeshitz, or in the past 25 years, right? This is in, what is it, in 1752, and he was accused in 1725 when he totally denied everything, is this Kameya. So if this is this Kameya and other Kameyas like them, that was Nodav Yehuda's idea. And this is what he writes. He says, I haven't come to make a declaration of impurity, push away, but rather bring close. He says, in such an endeavor, he says, I guess, I don't know if he was older at the time or younger. He says, when you're trying to make peace, everybody, great and small, poor and wealthy, you know, this is basically what he's saying. This is where I come in. In other words, I'm not, who am I to, you know, involved in this big machlokas between these great people? Who am I to come in? But when it comes to peace, everybody could speak. That's what his... Now, listen to what he says about the Kameya. And the Nodav Yehuda is really a politician. Now, watch his double talk. You see how he... You really can't pin him down which way he's going. It's brilliant the way he wrote it. He says like this. He says, if it were not for the accepted status of the righteousness of the Gaon, Rav Yonah's son, and in this regard, a scholar is superior than a prophet, than a Navi, upon whose status we rely. Based on a straightforward reading of the text, after some analysis, I would have decreed that the actual analysts that were sent to our lands from the holy communities of Hamburg and Metz are the handiwork of someone who was caught up in the net of the Chassid, whatever, Shapsai Tzvi. Okay, but to assume him to be clearly and unequivocally a heretic. Now, but Rav Yonos and Eibeshitz himself is something that we are not capable of. For who has the power to judge what's in a person's mind? Regarding these amulets, I will state and not deny the fact that despite all of the praises of the Gaon of Rav Yonah's son, after toiling to expound, I was not able to explain the amulets in a way that's not indicative of the insane ravings of the followers of Shapsei Tzvi. In other words, I took a look at the amulet. I'm trying to, maybe there's another way to interpret the amulet. Now, maybe besides Atbesh, there's another code. You know, there are different other ways of, there's one with the Aleph and the Ta and the Tes. And Aleph and Beis with Ches, you know, with the first nine letters. And maybe there are other ways of gematrias and trying to think. But no matter what, I guess he sat down, he tried to decode it using any of the other ways of interchanging letters. And he was not. He's saying, I can't. Despite all this, I am not going to expound them in a way that will cast aspersions on him, since it's not implicit and perhaps I don't know how to interpret them, or perhaps there is no interpretation. In other words, yes, you could interpret it in Atbesht, and it'll come out saying this, but maybe that was not the Kavanah. Maybe there is another way, and I just don't know it. Am I so haughty just to say that I know every single way of interpreting it? Or maybe it was just, you know, just nothing. It just didn't mean anything. So again, he's like leaving himself like a little bit open. He's saying, I'm not going to 100% say this. It looks bad. Definitely looks bad. Excuse me for my boldness, but if this is his proposal. He says, if three distinguished rabbis of Germany, of the German communities, agree with the following proposal, I also humbly join with them. I would decree a ban and a curse, similar to that of Yeshua ben Nun, for anyone holding these amulets, whether a man or a woman. From the moment they hear this curse, they should remove the amulets from their person and transfer it to Bezin. Bezin, upon receiving them, should not, chas v'shalom, open them and read them, but only bury them in an earthenware vessel, and the matter should be closed. In other words, you don't know what any other amulet said. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's a good amulet with good psukim and good thoughts. But we're not going to open up any of them. Anything that came would be just closed. At the very least, from this day on, even without the curses and without everything, no person should use these amulets. Anyone who violates these words is considered to be one who makes a breach and be bitten by the proverbial snake, the nachash. It's a certain thing for a curse that if you go against the cherem. even though it's possible that these amulets are untainted, you're going to get all these amulets from other places. If three other Rabbanim, he didn't want to do it all by himself. He needed, and I don't think he got the three Rabbanim. If three other Rabbanim would agree to this, then all four of them would sign their name and they would do the following. And it could be that the other amulets are 100% fine and contain nothing that's perverse or heretical. Nonetheless, it is a pitfall for the Jewish community as it lends support to the believers of Shabtai Tzvi, for they claim Rabbi Yonasan to be one of theirs. They say, we have a Rav and an authority upon whom we can rely. We look at that, you see that? He believes in Shabtai Tzvi, and look how accepted he is. By virtue of his exalted position, they have devised a plan to convert the masses to their heresy. Therefore, if you successfully carry out the following, the situation can be remedied. A ban should be pronounced to bury all of the amulets which have been issued by the Gaon. So I guess we do know that he was in the habit of issuing Kameyas. And a ban should be placed upon the Gaon. The Rabbi Yonasan never again, and also a ban should be placed upon the Gaon Rabbi Yonasan, never again to give out amulets, and it should be administered through an oath. That's what his proposed thing to do. If it would have been followed, it really would have muted everything. Like, what was his whole way of getting out this Shabtai Tzvi thing is by these amulets. So that's it. Take all the amulets, get rid of them all, cover them, close them. Rabbi Yonasan and Eibeshitz can save face, and there's no more problem with Shabtai Tzvi, or that's it. You know, there's no hint to any support or credence of Shabtai Tzvi. And that's what his Eitzah was.
Why did he want three more? Why couldn't he just get two more? Three constitutes of Eitzah?
I don't know. But I guess he felt three would have been, maybe even three without him. I don't know. But I guess he felt if he had three others, Yeah.
Is there any record of Yonasan trying to explain what this particular
I'm not sure. I'm sure. Yaakov Emden recorded a whole sefer on this, so it could be in there. He has back and forth what they said.
This was a dialogue that went on between the three of them.
I don't think they sat across the table and they wrote letters to each other. I mean, this is the one that did correspond more was the No de Yehuda. He was in the middle. But I don't think, again, I'm not so in, I didn't do as much research. What was, how did they talk to each other?
Did they know each other?
I'm guessing they did meet, especially since, if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, when he went to Ahu, when he went to Altina, what are these, the three communities? Ahu, I think, Reb Yaakov Emden's father was the last rabbi.
Chacham Tzvi.
Chacham Tzvi was the Rav, and instead of it going to Yaakov Emden, it went to Reb Yonasan Eibeshitz. So, I'm not sure how that also played into everything, but I can't believe it would be just that debased. It's such a simple jealousy, I don't think that you could say it like that. Maybe it was, you'd say maybe a Daki Dakos, maybe. But you see this one amulet itself. I mean, this is what they were working with, which is serious. Something that had to be dealt with. It's not like we could ignore this. It's not like they could have ignored it, really. Okay, so that's what his idea was. After having complied with these demands, the followers of Shabtai Tzvi would no longer be able to view him as one of theirs. We need to be very careful concerning his honor, right? The honor of, for his honor is the very honor of the Torah itself and the glory of heaven. God forbid, chas v'shalom, for us to think of ill of him in any way, and most certainly not to ascribe to that renowned Gaon any hint of heresy, nor to demolish his study, his yeshiva. Heaven forbid that we should deny his Torah to others. Rather, we should view him as a holy person with his honor intact, as it always was. They should seek Torah from his mouth, for there is no sweeter source than his. He was a darshan. The Yaristavash, his Torah, his drushas, is amazing. Right? An open letter from Rabbi Cheska Landau to a Rav Gaon, Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz. So even, it didn't even send, he sent it directly, but But he actually made this public, this letter public, and that Rav Yonos and Eibeshit should see. Okay. Just that, just at this point, I'm just going to go to, there's another, there was a Shaila V'Tshuva in the Noda B'Yehuda about a Sefer Torah that was written by, at the time, a secret Sabbatean, somebody who they suspected of being a Sabbatean, and who later became a Sabbatean. So they said, regarding the matter of a Sefer Torah, which was written by someone who was an established follower of Shabtai Tzvi, if he was already suspected at the time that he wrote it, even though he had not as yet made his status perfectly clear by a public profession, it is proper to be stringent and bury the Sefer. For regarding this accursed sect, we invoke the aphorism, Sof Maisa, I think, Machshava Tchila. There's another saying, I'm not sure how it is. The final state is indicative of the initial state. And we see at the end, this is really what is at the beginning. Now, this is something very interesting that he says. He says, whenever someone was a suspect of having been a member of the sect, those who harbored those suspicions were never guilty of the sin of suspecting an innocent person. So it's like almost 100% of people who were suspected of being Sabbateans were Sabbateans. So it's like almost never was somebody suspected and he really wasn't. There must have been things that the sect did that threw people off, the things that they said that really threw up some red flags. Okay? What else? As my experience, that few of those who were under the suspicion were totally innocent. And I think probably he did say this because of Rabbi Yonos and Eibeshitz. If they were not completely guilty, they were partially guilty. This applies to those who allegiance is still uncertain. This person, however, who revealed his roots and was unclean from the beginning to end and should it be buried. It should be buried. Mm-hmm. You should see to it, however, that it be done without controversy. The words of the wise are heard stately and gentle. Okay, so this is what Rabbi Yechezkel Landau, this is how he... now, another thing, this is Rabbi Elezer Fleckel's, the Tshuva's Mahava, is one of his closest Talmidim, one of the bigger Talmidim of the Noda B'Yehuda. And he writes, God forbid that you should put yourself in such a terrible, dangerous situation. So this is Rav Fleckel's Shaila V'Tshuva, especially in the light of which I am received from my master, the true Goan, which is the Noda B'Yehuda, regarding these leprous evil people, that no one was ever guilty of unjustly suspecting someone of being a follower of Shabtai Tzvi, for those who fell under the suspicion were truly his followers. Notice this is like his common knowledge, or at least Rav Fleckel's heard from the Noda B'Yehuda himself, that anybody suspected, you could be assured that they really are Shabtai Tzvi. Nobody was ever proven wrong, that really somebody was not. I've come to arouse the hearts of men of stature of the world regarding, now there, I guess there were certain Sfarim that came out. So this is also, Rabbi Yechezkel Landau, he writes that widespread in our countries, and we have to be careful. And he just goes through some of them. So these things that came out, which were Sabbatean outlook, so they attributed them to Rabbi Yonos and Eibeshitz. So they wanted Rabbi Yonos and Eibeshitz in the strongest way, shape, and form to say that he had nothing to do with it. Because, again, if you suspect him, you're saying you're doing it. So at the time I hinted to him, which is to Rabbi Yonos and Eibeshitz, that I had not read them thoroughly, the Goan replied to me, which is Rabbi Yonos and Eibeshitz, to the Noda B'Yehuda, in no uncertain terms that I excommunicate in his name all those who attribute authorship of those works to him. So there are three of these Sfarim that came out that were Sabbatean, and they said, you know, the author was Rabbi Yonos and Eibeshitz. Rabbi Yonos and Eibeshitz sent to Noda B'Yehuda saying, I didn't write them. If anybody says I did, excommunicate them. So he was very clear about these other Sfarim. Whether they make attribution in writing or any other form which will cause the spread of the harmful belief. And this is what he wrote about these other Sfarim. Immediately afterwards, so then he writes, the Noda B'Yehuda writes, I opened my eyes and I saw that these works contain things that are harmful and bitter as poison. Believe me that I have never heard such heresy. Let me mention these in writings with their characteristics. Okay, So first of all, there's a booklet that opens up, I came today, to deeper perception. In this work, they thought that Hashem, regarding Hashem, denied even the Ein Sof, like Hashem is like all-powerful. He says it's even worse than Aristotle, in the Greeks. See, the Greeks believed in God, and he's all-powerful. But they believed God is so great and awesome, like, what does he care about us little people? You know, there's a God that's all awesome. And this Sabbatean work, this author denies his providence by claiming his power is weak. He says, he's even worse than the Greeks. That he's all powerful, but he doesn't care about us. That's the Greeks. This Sabbatean book that he started to look at, whose people said Rav Yonasan Eibishitz authored it, and Rav Yonasan Eibishitz clearly said he didn't, and he said, you know, just totally denied authorship. And this is what it said, that somehow Hashem is weak. Again, there's a commentary, Shir Hashirim, he sings songs of a wicked heart, a mouth that speaks lewd things, besmirching Hashem. There was another book in Megillas Esther, Work of Slander, another book regarding intentions of blowing up the shofar, and he disgraces the word of Hashem.
Where did they find these?
They were printed out. So that's it. Like you went to the bookstore. Yeah. These were like very newly printed svarim that were making their way around. I don't know if they had like an Eichler's back then, you know, or Z. Berman, you know, but they had peddlers and people would get svarim, and you know, they probably went from town to town, and they would, so these books were being printed and they were being sold who knows where and how, and they were finding their way around. So they found these books, found their way to the Noda B'Yehuda. He says they denied this book, denies the religion. Okay, and these are different books. Arise now and excommunicate every work by its name, excommunicate the original owner who produced these, as well as those who copy them. Okay, the response on this going, which is, he's referring to Yonasan Eibishitz, the responsibility is even greater than others in order to remove him from the taint of rumors by these idiots, the believers of Shabtai Tzvi, who base themselves on his authority. Therefore, he should publish, and this is now he's giving so Rav Yonasan Eibishitz sent a letter to Noda B'Yehuda. It's not me, and I'm excommunicating anybody that says it's from me. So Noda B'Yehuda sent back, this is what you should do. Basically, you should publish a severe writ of excommunication to curse and execrate the author of these booklets. And study, and whoever studies and holds onto them. We should send printed material throughout the entire Jewish world, every province, and clearly mention these writings and the characteristic features and titles. With this man, Rav Yonasan Eibishitz, will be innocent of sin, and all the Jewish people will also be guiltless and peaceful reign. Again, the Noda B'Yehuda dealing with these books, giving a suggestion to Yonasan Eibishitz what he should write. Now, this is from the Pnei Yeshua. Bnei Yeshua and Rabbi Yaakov Emden clearly and publicly were speaking against Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz. And this is one of the letters that Bnei Yeshua wrote. He says, "Recognize your Creator and don't hide your eyes and heart from the way of truth. As I wrote you in my previous letter, in which I considered an error and mistake, we have found great men who have erred at this point, and some of them admitted their error without embarrassment. If you do this, your honor will only be enhanced. If you feel that this is too difficult for you to become unmasked, at least you should share this matter with a group of three or four notable rabbanim, and who will analyze the situation and make a well thought out, intelligent decision." In other words, the Pnei Yeshua is holding that for sure. Yonatan Eibishitz, you made a mistake. You are a Shabtai Tzvinik, and okay. So what the best thing to do is come out in public and say you were. This is it. You thought this, and you were wrong, and people would think great of you. And if you can't do that, get yourself three or four rabbanim and ask counsel. Go speak to, you know, a rav or a shiva, you know, some great rav, and together you'll come up with some sort of plan how to fix all this up. And this is the letter Bnei Yeshua sent to Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz.
It's almost like it's absurd. Like,
It's absurd, but and yet you're speaking with the greatest Rabbanim of the time. What do you think, the reason why there's no winners here, because no matter what do you think Klal Yisrael held of the rabbis, the esteem of the rabbis, during and after this machlokas? There's no winners. What? If the Pnei Yeshua is right, then the greatest rabbi is a Sabbatean follower. And if he's not a Sabbatean follower, what in the world is Rabbi Yaakov Emden and Pnei Yeshua doing? Besmirching a great rabbi. There's no end to this. Now, were both sides working L'Shem Shemayim? Absolutely. In their minds, the Pnei Yeshua, if you really believe, and Rabbi Yaakov Emden, they believe that he is a Sabbatean, you have to do something. You have to scream up. You can't allow a Sabbatean to exist among the people. Who knows what danger he can cause. We already saw the danger. How many hundreds and thousands of people went off and converted out because of one man, and this could just only continue and get worse. Continuing, if you do not, God forbid, take heed of these words which I am being given as advice and a last warning, that I will be forced to publicize this thing to all of your brethren throughout the diaspora. I am confident your wisdom that you will lend an ear to my argument, which is said with truth and upright heart. And this is the letter that the Pnei Yeshua sent. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, 1751. Emden was labeled as a slave. So now, this is what happened. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden, at this time, I think the Rabbi Yonasan Eibershitz was the Rav of Amsterdam, Altona, and what are the three? Ahu, the three communities. Hamburg, Altona, and Vladivostok, I think. So there were three communities, and he was the Rav, Rav Yonasan Eibershitz. And Rav Yaakov Emden is screaming, he's a Shabbat Sphinx. So what happened?
After his letter was sent to Rav Yonasan Eibershitz, did he do anything about it?
I guess he responded. He responded, yeah. I guess he must have. He definitely denied being a Shabbat Sphinx. I mean, he denied it. I'm not. So, like, what do you do about the amulet? So, I'm not sure what he said about the amulet, but maybe he said, I didn't write it. But we know you did write it. You write amulets. They say they got it from you. Something. So, they believe he's lying. He's saying, no, I'm telling the truth. It's not me. Something's got to give. There's somebody's not telling the truth here. And how do we find out? I mean, I'm guessing, this is just, I'm trying to a short time, 45 minutes, I didn't go through the years, and the back and forth of all the letters and what each one was tining and but now it came into the public. So at that point, at some point, Yaakov Emden was a slanderer, and basically they threw him out of town. They forced him to leave the Amsterdam. And then Reb Emden then went to Frederick V of Denmark, and the court there ruled in favor of Reb Yaakov Emden and ordered the town of Altoona to stop actions against Emden, and Yaakov Emden was able to come back now. But then what happened is, then Reb Yaakov, Reb Eibershitz and his followers, they went to the council of the Arba Arzos, there was a council of the four lands. When we spoke about Poland, we spoke about this council, which was still going on. And the council in Poland, and the council in the Arba Arzos in Poland ruled in favor of Rabbi Yonasan Eibershitz. But again, that was a breach of what Frederick. Frederick the Fifth, he said, leave Emden alone, leave Yaakov Emden alone, don't go afterwards. And then they did. They went to the council to prove that they wanted the council to tell the world that Rabbi Yonasan Eibershitz was innocent. And they did. They established his innocence and reestablished him as a prominent Rav. Okay. 1960, the quarrel broke out once more. Okay, and this is a sad ending. But this was in 52, 8-9 years later. Some Sabbatean elements were discovered among the students of Rav Jonas and Eibeschitz's yeshiva. At the same time, his younger son, Wolf Jonas Eibeschitz, presented himself as a Sabbatean prophet and was close to several Frankists. Remember last week we spoke about the Frankists, and with the result, the yeshiva was closed. That's again a sad ending to a totally sad situation. And I guess that's really what I have about this situation. And it just
the truth, though, right?
Right. In the secular world, they are 100% sure. If you'd ask all the secular scholars that study this, and they do study this, they all believe he definitely was a Sabbatean, you know, and whatever proofs they bring, the amulet, and I don't know, maybe the end, the yeshiva, it's just different things. But history or the Jewish people, they're both right. In other words, the Rabbi Yonas and Eibeschitz's Svarim are still learnt, and Rabbi Yaakov Emden and the Pnei Yeshua is also learnt. So we, Klal Yisrael, has not picked sides. We still use both.
It's very curious that the Sabbatean went to the courts to get exoneration.
I don't know if the Sabbateans went to the court. What do you mean, Rabbi Yonas and Eibeschitz?
No, Emden.
Rabbi Emden, right? He's not the Sabbatean. Rav Yonas and Eibeschitz was against, and he went to the courts to get himself back into the city.
Civil court.
Yeah, he did go to a, it sounds like he did go to a civil court. I did not look up in exactly what he did, but he was asked to leave, and he got civil courts to allow him to come back and to force the other side not to hound Rav Yaakov Emden anymore.
And the Council of the Four Lands was
That's Frum. That's real Frum. That's the greatest Rabbanim in it was Poland, Lithuania, greater Ukraine, and the I forgot the names. There's certain areas that they were, but that was Poland, Lithuania, Ukraine. That area all had a council of four lands. Sometimes it was only three, sometimes it were five. And that's where all shilas, the rabbanim, made tikkunim there. And they would do all the yeshivas, and they met at the fairs. It was the Lublin fair, and then there was a fair elsewhere.
Was Rabbi Emden a part of it?
Huh?
No,
Rabbi Emden was in Amsterdam. Amsterdam was not in Poland.
Nobody went back to Altona.
Right, Altona is near Amsterdam. That's in the Western Europe.
But he ran first to the King of Denmark.
Right, Yaakov Emden.
Right. That's how powerful Shabtai Tzvi had become. That it was a threat to the monarchs, right?
So I'm not sure why. I'm not sure if Frederick was afraid of Shabtai Tzvi and therefore he sided with Rabbi Yaakov Emden. I'm not sure. Could have been his father, the Chacham Tzvi, was very also well connected, and you know, maybe for whatever reason he sided with Yaakov Emden and told the Jews to leave him alone.
Previously, we saw that Shabtai Tzvi was a threat to the Turkish Empire.
Correct, but that was Turkish, right? I mean, this is 100 years later. I mean, there's no more threat outside of the Jewish world. Right now, we're dealing with people that have these crazy thoughts and belief that Mashiach came and he's still around, and we have this new Torah, and like you saw the different things and thoughts of what they're, you know.
Really died out in that 100 years.
They're still going, yeah.
I mean, this spark with the amulet, right? That just
Right, right. So what really did undid the what really undid the Sabbatean movement was the Hasidic movement, because all the advantages that the secret Sabbateans had with being a secret Sabbatean, they were able to, that need was fulfilled with the Hasidic movement, and that became mainstream. You got that plus more. So that's going to be, hopefully we'll get to it. Next week, I think I would like to start with the No de Yehuda, because the No de Yehuda has, there's just a lot of things that he went through. He was, today, it'd be like that modern Rav that has to deal with the firm community and the world at large, you know, and he had to deal with rulers and leaders and issues of Klal Yisrael. So I'd like to just go through a few of the issues and things of Noam de Yehuda's life. And then afterwards, I'd like to go to the next indirect cause of the Shabsai Tzvi debacle, which would have been the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lozato, the author of the Mesillas Yesharim. Sorry, yeah?
I heard something about the Vilna Gaon accusing the first Lubavitcher Rebbe of being a heretic and put him in a harem. Is there any truth to that story?
It could be, yeah, there is, but we see...
Because of his Hasidus would be similar to the...
Maybe that's what they were afraid of. They were afraid at that time of a new sect forming like a Shabsai Tzvi sect. Within 50 years, that breach, you know, it's more involved. I mean, it's Hashem in the next few times we'll see what was the Gra afraid of. There was a lot of serious things that the Gra had serious concerns about the Hasidic movement. And probably if not for the Gra, the Hasidic movement may have gone over the edge. But whatever the Hasidic movement did, they had to answer the Gra. You know, they had to answer what, you know, and years later, the Gra died in 1797. So, you know, afterwards they had to explain themselves to the established, I guess what they call themselves, Misnagdim.
But wasn't it known by the public at large that Shabsai Tzvi was a heretic from the start, including his personal behavior as well as his view of Torah law personally and publicly?
Right, so...
And his conversion to Islam and his being...
You would think... Right, you would think, you know, while he was acting as Mashiach, he's doing averus. And then afterwards, he actually converted to Islam. Hello, how could he be your Mashiach? So we did spend time on it, and it's a certain Nathan of Gaza had a brilliant answer for this all. It had to do with But the idea basically is they took the Arizal Kabbalah, which was relatively new at the time, and they just made a few twists to explain everything. And that was that, you know, there are certain, the whole world is just to get sparks, and when we collect all the sparks, Mashiach will come. And there were a few sparks in areas that can only so down and deep in the Rishimu and whatever, that only Shabsai Tzvi can get it. And you can only get it if you do averus, like averu lishma. And they bought it. It's, yeah.
I think, as I recall, Errol Wine said that they were buried next to each other in Amber.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that's, I think you're right. I believe that. So Shabsai, I'm sorry, not Shabsai, see. Yonasan, Ibishitz, and Yaakov Emden, they were buried next to each other. There's a story where it was like raining, and it was Erev Shabbos, and they just quickly they couldn't find the grave, and quickly they just saw an opening and they put it in. When they came back, they realized they were buried together. I'm not sure if that's the story with these two or others. I'll have to remind myself, check that out. All right, thank you so much.